Greetings and welcome to the First Foundation's Wealth Management Insights Call. Today's call is being recorded. At this time, all participants have been placed in a listen-only mode. And now I'd like to turn the call over to John Hacopian. Please go ahead.
Thank you for joining us and good afternoon. We're grateful to have the opportunity to speak with you today. We will continue to do these calls during this time in hopes of providing some perspective on what is happening in the markets and the economy. As a reminder, we also post the replays of these calls to our website. On the call today, we have Rick Keller. Rick's the founder, chief economist. Drew Chan, who's been with us on all of the calls. He is head of portfolio strategy. And we have Dan Fan with us also, and he is the head of our wealth planning group. Dan's going to talk about the recently passed CARES Act. The format for today is to address the many questions we have been receiving over the last 2 weeks. And if we miss any question you may have, please shoot us an email and we'll address it at the next call. We probably will have in about 2 weeks. But first, we're going to start off with some of the perspectives of where we are. The market bottomed on that Monday, March 23rd, and since then we talked about the Fed actions, and then recently the $2 trillion stimulus bill was passed, the CARES Act, by Congress. This has had an enormous impact on markets. So Rick, perhaps you can share with us where things stand today.
Good afternoon, and as John said, thank you for joining us. So the CARES Act, the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, Economic Securities Act, the acronym CARE, had about 8 very important provisions in it. Probably the most important, gotten the most press, has been the Paycheck Protection Program. And they call it PPP. And this was a $2.1 trillion act, of which $349 billion was allocated to small business owners to keep their employees employed during this period. So in our previous call, we talked about the economy and how the initial phase, this quarter, is straight down in terms of economic activity. So if you can think of a part of the L, we're in the L phase where things are dropping, where unemployment goes through the roof, job layoffs, but to preserve income and people's lifestyle, both houses and the president signed this bill on March 27th. So if you think about people that are unemployed, the biggest fear is they make no money. Well, instead of, they're not replacing 100% of their paycheck through unemployment, but through the CARE Act, if they can maintain for as long as 3 months people's full salaries, and the government forgives this loan, so they make the loan to the business, and they are willing to forgive this loan, and it's not taxable income to the business, this is a way to keep the economy going. So during this initial downdraft that we're experiencing, if we are able to maintain incomes for the majority of the U.S. population, maybe it won't be nearly as bad as we initially thought. And so this is important, and I apologize for ringing in the background there. Close the door. The provision is covered through the SBA, and we've encouraged everybody to apply immediately because the fear was that they would run out of this $349 billion early and a lot of small business owners be left without. But today we see the headline that Congress is going to submit a new provision to add an additional $250 billion in additional relief to small business owners. So that will be really positive. There are many provisions to this. many of them affect banks, because, as you know, First Foundation Bank, and that are really conducive to maintaining economic growth and stability by not requiring banks to write off loans, to work with their customers, and things like that. So, and that's handled through the Federal Reserve System as opposed to directly with the other areas of the government. So this is actually a very important piece of legislation. A lot of the provisions haven't been spelled out, but we are pleased, and we think the follow-on bills here are going to be critical to the success as well.
Thanks, Rick. And I think we'd agree, unlike 2008 when we had a financial crisis, and today banks are part of the solution. And as Rick said, some of these initiatives are being handled by banks, and it does appear as though, at least when you describe that L-shaped, we got some cushion here, at least from the stimulus bill passed by Congress, and maybe it takes away the worst case scenario. And so the Fed has implemented their initiatives, unlimited purchases of corporate bonds, treasuries, mortgage-backed securities, muni bonds. They're doing a lot more than they ever did in 2008, bigger, faster. And so I think the primary goal of all these initiatives is to minimize how bad unemployment might be, because in 2008, the unemployment rate got way up there, and it took 10 years to get back to where it was before. So the number one goal today is try to keep people employed, so that when we get on the other side of this, that hopefully the unemployment rate isn't significantly going to be higher, but hopefully it's not as bad as it could have been. Drew, so over to you with the next question. I think you talked at the last on the last call that this was the fastest drawdown. I think it was 21 or 22 days of a 20% correction, and I think we saw that same drawdown in many of the bond categories. In many of the bond categories too, that back in 2008 might have taken 8 or 9 months. So with that, and we've also seen a subsequent rebound here in the last week or so. With that, how are we viewing investments across equities and fixed income today?
Yeah, you know, it was just a few short weeks ago, you know, he corrected down almost on the S&P 500, almost 36%. And technically, if you look at yesterday, we actually have entered a new bull market. Markets have rallied actually 20% up from the bottoms. So you talked about how quickly the bear market came. You know, don't think that, you know, we're off to the races yet, but volatility continues to, continue. So, you know, the bear market actually lasts about 48 days. Typically, bear markets last about 20 months. To put things in perspective for March specifically, there were 22 trading days, and 18 out of those 22 trading days, the S&P 500 moved plus or minus 2%. So I know a few months ago I had written, you know, markets probably going to trade in the 2 to 3% range. Obviously, we saw markets kind of trading into that 4 to 8% daily range. But it does seem over the last few days, the last week, as people have started to adjust the fiscal policy and monetary policy, volatility has come down a little bit more. VIX is back in the 40s, was above in the 80s. So definitely there's still opportunities outside in many investment asset classes. Probably not as attractive as they were a few weeks ago. But I think the key thing too is remember is that there's still a lot of unknowns, what's going on in the world today. Particularly, what is it at the end of the tunnel? And I think that's a lot of the questions that people are, investors are asking themselves. What are the long-term impacts? Particularly for both employers as well as employees and consumers. I think, you know, big thing that, particularly for myself, we're trying to learn what we can live with and what we can live without. So a lot of the things that particularly we spent, you know, our active dollars on in the past may not be spent on going in the future. You know, you touched on fixed income, and fixed income continues to be an area that has healed quite a bit since the Fed, instituted their policy, as you mentioned earlier, backing up mini bonds as well as corporate bonds for the first time. That area is really starting to heal, and things are starting to act a little bit normal. Fixed income, even though yields continue to remain low, still serve as that long-term ballast in market volatility. Continue to be an area where safety is of the utmost importance, and we still think it makes sense in the portfolio. Now, things like high yield, still very, very early in terms of an opportunity. Spreads have widened out pretty significantly, over 1,000 basis points over the last few weeks. But kind of going back to the unknowns, you know, I think it's key to remember that the situation that we're in right now, the current market environment, is a combination of both the coronavirus as well as the energy, dislocation with the oil price war between OPEC and Russia. Now, today we saw a nice pop in oil again, as it looks like, OPEC and Russia will have a discussion, hopefully this week, about production reducing. So that has helped stabilize markets, because there we were always worried about the credit contagion, which could proliferate throughout the rest of the markets at the worst possible time. Equities continue to be attractive. If you really start to think about the amount of companies that actually have higher yields, particularly those that are higher quality, strong balance sheets, higher than the 10-year treasury, which is kind of hovering about 75 basis points today. Look, I think the hard part right now with investors is trying to look through the next few months. Rick mentioned for the economy, a lot of the data that's going to be coming out, we talked about the last conference call, is going to be ugly. Tomorrow we see another round of initial jobless claims. That's probably going to be pretty bad again. But the key thing is be able to look through the next few months, be able to look through some of the fundamental deterioration of a lot of these companies in the near term, and look out longer term and say, are these the companies that are going to be able to survive, contain and grow market share? We do think that equities in the long term still make a lot of sense. And a key thing to remember, Warren Buffett always says, when you're investing in stocks, you have to remind yourself you're not owning a ticker, you're owning a business. And these businesses are built for the long term. And we still think that equities for the long term still should stick with very attractive.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Drew. One of the, I think 2008, although it seems like an eternity ago, it does in some ways, I could still remember a lot of things that happened in 2008, and it took a number of months for any company to be able to issue a corporate bond, and I think the Fed realized this time around they can't have that happen. They need to keep these markets liquid, and there's been several bond offerings in the last week. Even lower quality companies, which would have never been able to issue a bond in 2008, Carnival Cruise Lines issued a bond just the other day at 12%, and investors purchased it. It's not something we would buy, but there are investors out there that purchased it. So the Fed, I think, realized that they got to keep that the bond market sort of the fuel in the economy, and if that has to stay stable in order for us to get that rebound. So, Rick, back over to you. It seems like the medical situation has gotten a little less worse, but we're probably going to flow from the medical situation to the economy at some point. And Drew mentioned the second quarter is probably going to be probably the ugliest quarter here, and you've oftentimes said it could be down anywhere from 10 to 20% in terms of GDP growth. What do you expect? And then you mentioned maybe an L-shaped or a U-shaped recovery. What do you expect for the balance of this quarter? And then what happens in the third and fourth quarter? What's our best case? What's our base case? And what could be our worst case scenario? So there's a lot there. So give it your best shot.
Yeah, to give you some idea of the variability, we've seen for instance, Goldman go from a minus 5 negative on the second quarter to then a minus 24 and ultimately a minus 34. We've seen a couple other firms at the minus 15% for the second quarter. The thing is, I think it's just important to note that the direction is negative and very negative at that. With the programs like the PPP coming in, the worst case scenarios should be very short-lived as we get money into the right people's hands. The other thing is the thing is in the economy, if people save that money and don't spend it, it may not have the desired effect. So it's important that money gets spent that's out there. So this quarter, straight down, its magnitude, we think, should be in the range of maybe a minus 15%, followed by a bottoming out, and that's the bottom shape of the U, because we think this will be a U-shaped recovery. So if we down this quarter, flat, recovering, people start going back to work, maybe we have some normalcy there. But even then, that's going to be fits and starts because we may end up with rolling hotspots of the virus in different parts of the country. But one thing we know is the United States starts to warm up in terms of weather. We should get a positive effect there. And then the other thing is more and more people that have had the virus become immune to the virus itself. And hopefully there are some other things that can roll out. So by the third quarter, we expect that to be a positive quarter. And then followed by the fourth quarter, where really we hope that things are heading back to normal. So true normalcy, as we experienced before, is probably a 2021 event because it will take a vaccine or some reliable indicators that the work environment is safe, the travel environment is safe. So if you can think of measuring in your own neighborhood, looking what's happening at the local restaurant when people are starting to go back and socialize and get back to normal behavior, airline travel picks back up and things like that. So those will be some of the first signs. So if we think of the third quarters to find out where we are in the fourth quarter, it really, the rubber has to hit the road. That's where we need to really see things turn back up. But we know by looking at China that it can be done. They have. But the problem with the data out of China is so unreliable and questionable that we're not sure what really occurred there, how bad it was and how long. So but we are positive by the end of the year. And we think, you know, stocks move ahead of the information. This has been quite a rally off the bottom. Unfortunately, the economic news is going to be really pretty bad going forward. As Drew mentioned, these things normally take time to work out, and we do think the economic numbers that we're going to see in the weeks ahead, starting tomorrow with jobless claims, and then ending probably the most important number we're going to want to see, April job losses, so the employment report, which will come out the first Friday of May for the month of April, and that'll be extremely important. But that'll give us some guidance, and you know, we'll see it in some of these numbers. But it's so evolving for the real estate industry and some of the travel and hospitality industry that we really will. It'll take a couple months to really see the real impact of this shut down. So
bad second quarter, things stabilize in the third quarter, and some positive momentum potentially in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Is that a good summary?
Yeah. I think with all the government stimuluses and everything that we've seen, they're really going to get some traction, because in economics you have something called the money multiplier, and that is you give me $1,000, I spend that $1,000, whoever I spent that $1,000, they spend that $1,000, and so money can multiply 3 to 8 times in the economy if it's spent, more so in the private sector than in the government sector spending, but really in that third and fourth quarter we really should get some traction here going positive here.
Yeah, although this is an unprecedented situation, the stimulus has equally been unprecedented, both from the Fed, from the CARES Act. And so as a result, as you said, we probably you've probably avoided the worst case scenario, and now we get to see how this stimulus is going to filter through the economy and how it adds to the potential upside, whether it's in the third and fourth quarter. But Dan, speaking of the CARES Act, go ahead, Rick.
I was just going to add that what was mentioned before is critical, in that this time we rolled these programs out so quickly, whereas in 2008, it took upwards of a year. If people may remember, we had up to four moves by both the Federal Reserve and the government. It took upwards of a year to get them all in. But here we have them rolled out immediately, all in 1 month.
Yeah.
So it is unprecedented, the speed and the amount, the volume of money they're putting towards this effort is unprecedented.
So speaking of money and amount of volume, Dan, the CARES Act, as Rick said, has a lot of important elements to it. What are some of the things that our clients should be discussing with their wealth advisors, particularly for those who are retired?
Yeah, for those who are retired, similar to what happened during the financial crisis back in 2008, they suspended required minimum distributions for retirement accounts. So that goes for people and individuals who have been in RMD status. It also applies for inherited IRA. There's a little bit of a special rule for those who turn 70 and a half. I'll touch on that shortly, but that's a good thing. If you needed the withdrawals from your retirement accounts anyway, then just go ahead and continue to make it. You may not, though, have to make as large of a withdrawal as you would under the required minimum distribution amount. So judge that and look at that could benefit you from a tax perspective, because as you know, every dollar that comes out of a retirement plan is taxable income. The thing about, we've been asked a lot, is, well, what happens if I had taken RMDs earlier in the year? Is there ability to undo that? Because RMDs are suspended, and you may know the general rule is you can't roll RMDs into an IRA or another retirement account, but because RMDs are technically suspended for this year, those withdrawals aren't technically considered RMDs anymore. So you could considerably roll that back into an IRA. A couple rules you have to meet, though. It has to be within 60 days. So that rollover has to be within 60 days when that distribution occurred. And the second is you can't have more than one rollover in a 12-month period. So if you've taken three rollovers this year, distributions, one in January, one in February, one in March, you may only be able to roll over one of them back into the IRA. And this does not include inherited IRAs. Unfortunately, if the distributions have been made through an inherited IRA, you're not going to be able to roll it back into the IRA and then do that distribution at that point and be taxable. I mentioned also there's a special rule for those who turned 70 and a half last year. You may have heard something called the Secure Act that happened earlier this year, where it delayed the age of required minimum distribution from 70 and a half to 72, but it doesn't take effect until this year. So those folks who turned 70 and a half last year in 2019, theoretically that was their first distribution year, so they had to take a 2019 distribution. Under the law, they could do it in 2019, or they could wait till April 1st. If they did indeed wait until April 1st, that 2019 RMD is also suspended, along with the 2020 RMD. So all this sounds great at the end of the day, but I think at the end of the year, one of the things that you should definitely get together with your advisor and discuss is whether or not you should take distribution withdrawals at the end of the year. And there's a couple of factors for that. One, if the market returns and the value returns and comes up, it may be an increased value because of market conditions. Again, we'll see by the end of the year. The second reason is without required minimum distribution, your account values may grow as well. And the third, as you know, this is an election year. So if it looks like things are going to change dramatically from a tax perspective, maybe it's wiser to take some withdrawals this year to lessen what the 2021 RMDs will look like. So those are things that we're constantly evaluating and looking at, but the things I think at the end of the year need to be looked at deeply, whether or not maybe you should take some withdrawals anyway, just to lessen the tax bill, what may happen in 2021.
Great. Thanks, Dan. And we'll come back to you in a question or two. The economy was in great shape, Rick, heading into the crisis. I think you oftentimes said it was the Goldilocks economy, not too hot, not too cold, just in that right range. But obviously there were some areas of concern. The trade war, which finally resolved itself, and then we rolled into the, I guess you could call it the oil war, where the price of oil collapsed, and other things we are looking at. What key indicators, other than the medical-related news on the coronavirus, are we looking at to determine whether the economy is on the mend? Question to Rick.
Thank you, John. You know, as you mentioned, and Drew mentioned earlier, the energy price war that erupted between Russia and Saudi Arabia was really something that was unexpected, and that was a really bad event. The good thing is it seems like it's healing. Neither Russia nor Saudi Arabia can make their own fiscal budgets at the current price of oil. I think I said before, you know, Russia needs about $40 a barrel to break even in terms of their fiscal budget, and Saudi Arabia needs $70. They're so reliant on oil. So if we can get that turned around, the companies that will be folding up their tents may be curtailed dramatically, and that would be really good news. But other things, the most important current indicator we can follow is jobless claims. How many people were laid off from the prior week? So as you may have heard last week, 6.3 million people. That was 10 times the worst week we ever had in 2008. So that number tomorrow, I think, could be just as bad because so many people have had a difficult time filing. So we're going to start to see that number is going to stay high for a while. The other thing is, as the PPP program rolled out, a lot of people are going to go back to work. So at the end of the month, following the employment number for the month, which is a net of job losses and job hires, which there may be very few job hires, but it is going to be the important number, and it's always reported the first Friday of every month. I think following in terms of the investments, we're following the spread of the credit market. So, you know, the credit market is really accurate at gauging the risk in the economy. So if we see high yield spreads that have blown out starting to come back in, that's going to be because of confidence and things aren't going to be as bad as predicted. Because right now they are really on what we consider a worst case basis, which we don't see developing at this point. So we're going to watch the credit spreads. The other thing is the real estate industry is still unfolding, and we want to make sure that in the real estate investment trusts that are in the public markets, that they come back and have access to capital if they need it, and make sure that landlords are able to collect rent again on their properties, and that would be another very important area for us. So the federal government is going to have to stay in the game. They're going to have to continue to evaluate and assess the current programs, how they're working. And as we said today, them to propose to expand the PPP, the Paycheck Protection Program, to more businesses by adding an additional $250 billion. That's extremely important. So this program was intended to last 3 months through June 30th, and that's why this is the bad quarter. This is the quarter we want the dollars out there into the economy and to do their magic there. But as we move forward, employment is going to be number one, followed by the credit markets, and make sure there's some healing there, and then obviously the health of the ability to someone come up with a vaccine or something that is a way to save lives and give people the confidence that they can go back out and get back to what we'd call normal.
Thanks, Rick. And speaking of the credit markets, I'm, again, thinking back to 2008 when the credit markets got hit, and this time they dropped a lot faster in a shorter period of time. In 2008, it took a number of months, but then subsequent, when the rebound happened, corporate bonds, mortgage-backed securities, many of these securities had very strong returns. In 2009, today, I would say the Fed is purchasing more of these securities in a broader context. It's muni bonds, it's corporate bonds, it's mortgages. So I don't think they probably don't have quite as much of the downside that we saw in 2008, and hopefully we get the rebound. But we're watching those credit spreads fairly closely, and so far what we could say is at least in the last 2 weeks, things have gotten better. Companies have been issuing corporate bonds, and so it seems to us that things are rebounding quite nicely there. But as Rick said, if they reverse and go the other direction, probably not a great thing. But the Fed has said they would purchase an unlimited amount of those securities that provide stability in the marketplace. Hey, Dan, back to you. It's that time of the year, April, which is when we start talking about taxes and tax planning for the balance of the year. This year is different in many ways, including when we have to file. But are there other wealth planning strategies that our clients should be considering now?
Yeah, I think generally, and that's a great question, John, I think generally it's always a great time. Hopefully we've done a financial plan in the past 4 years. We've looked at some cash flow analysis and looked at things, most people are concerned about having enough funds to be able to live the lifestyle that they want to live throughout the retirement. Hopefully we've done one. Great time to look at that again and see, because now it's technically a stress test, and reevaluate some of those suggestions as well and look at those. The second thing to do is then look at the CARES Act and look at other related legislation that's been passed this year and see if there's anything that could be taken advantage of. For example, one of the things that happened with the last tax bill, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act that was passed at the end of 2017, was that it limited the amount of business loss that you could use to offset non-business income to $250,000 for an individual and $500,000 were married couple. Well, under CARES Act, they repealed that for a limited time. So if back in 2018 and 2019 you had excessive losses and you weren't able to take it because of these caps, you can now. And so you can go back and get the refund for those losses as well. So there's things such as that we can look at and maybe take advantage of. There's changes to the charitable contribution. I know a lot of folks are looking more at conserving their wealth, but there's charitable contribution increase in limitations on how much you can deduct for cash gifts that you could take advantage of to do other goals as well. So those are a couple things to look at for now as well. The other thing too is, and again, if you're stable, if you feel comfortable doing this, because of depressed values, and you always have an estate tax issue, it may be a great thought in mind of doing some gift tax planning to alleviate what could be a state tax issue. And that brings up the other thing that's going to happen at the end of the year, the elections, and what that's going to entail as well. So depressed values, and if things change dramatically from a political standpoint going forward, maybe it's a wise time to look at that as well. The other thing that a lot of folks were doing previously and is still going to take effect, especially next year going forward as RMDs come back and as the Secure Act, which doesn't allow you for inherited IRAs for those folks to stretch out payments over their life anymore. They're not able to do that. They generally, when someone inherits an IRA who's not a spouse, has to take it over 10 years. You've been looking at a lot of other strategies to deal with that issue. One of them is considering converting a portion of those retirement accounts now into a Roth IRA and looking at those strategies. That can work because tax rates are lower now. Would it be as effective going forward? Again, politics, difficult to tell going forward. But those are things to look at But there are definitely things to think about as we near year end, opportunities that are provided because of that. So, yeah, definitely time to sit down with your advisor, sit down with the planning group over at First Foundation. We definitely think through some of these things and work forward on it.
Rick, do you have anything to add there?
Yeah, it doesn't work for everybody, so it's something that Dan and the planning team can project out, but first person is talk to your investment advisor, and then we can drill down and see if it's an appropriate strategy for you. The other thing is we need to go through our client accounts and see if anybody can utilize some capital losses where we can switch out of something with a take a capital loss and book it for next year gain, because this is a political season. We're going to have an election here, and if we get a change in party, we could see higher tax rates, and being able to carry forward capital losses could make a lot of sense for a lot of people. So make sure you have that discussion with your RM, and all our RMs are prepared to talk about it for all our clients. So I think I just add that.
Thanks, Rick. And before I get to the final question, we do get a lot of questions about municipal bonds. And as most of you know, the yields have been super low for the last few years. And about 2 to 3 weeks ago, the prices on munis dropped just like other fixed income, because I think Rick mentioned it on the last call that investors were getting skittish about everything. And as a result, in order to get liquidity, they were willing to take unusually lower prices. And so we saw that as an opportunity. We're trying to buy some municipal bonds where appropriate. The yields could have dropped a little, or the prices could have dropped more, but then the Fed came out and announced that they would buy an unlimited amount of muni bonds to stabilize that market. And so far, they haven't purchased any, but the plan is they would be purchasing them shortly. So this is definitely an opportunity for us to purchase some of these bonds. They're nowhere near the 5 and 6% levels they got to in 2008, but a month ago they were at 1.5 to 2. Today they're more like 2 to 3%. So they're better than they were a few months ago, and so it's something opportunistically we're trying to add along with other types of fixed income. So we're going to end it with go ahead, Rick.
Can I add in that point, if you know, in the state of California, the unfunded pension liability has been a big issue for a lot of our municipalities, and corporate balance sheet unfunded pension liabilities is usually it has a 12/31 year end. Well, on state and municipalities, it's usually a 6/30 year end, meaning the end of this quarter will be the valuation date for the value of the pension plans. And with the drop that we've had in the market here, there could be much higher than average payments required by each city to maintain its existing pension obligations that they've promised their employees. So I think that's going to put particular strain on a lot of these municipalities here in the state of California. So I just throw that out there as something to come.
No, that's a good point. It might that might be another catalyst to drive yields up more from where they're at, and so we've done very little purchasing of muni bonds the last few years. But as yields go up and prices get cheaper, we're trying to stick with that highest quality of the segment. And if we could get, you know, it might be someday where we could get back to the 3 to 4% double tax free yields. And that would be a very attractive number to lock in if we can get there. So we're going to end with the final question of the day. Each day brings a new set of updates and news stories. And there's countless information out there. Everyone across America is at home with access to every bit of financial news. Perhaps we can share what we deem as most important. So for Drew and Rick, I know you've already touched on some of this, Rick, but what is the investment team at First Foundation Advisors monitoring each day, and what data is most relevant to our investment decision-making? So maybe start with you, Drew, and we'll end it with Rick.
Sure. You know, Rick mentioned the employment data, and I definitely think that's something to constantly monitor. You know, we're both looking at the macro as well as the micro. The macro in terms of what has China done as they restarted their engines, and not specifically looking at the data provided by the government, but the underlying data that we're seeing from companies. And the same thing here in the United States. You know, companies like Starbucks, which have reopened stores in China, Apple, which have reopened in their Apple stores in China, and really see what the potential scenarios are as the economy starts to reignite itself. I think that data is very important, and to see, you know, where the pain points are and how people are managing their businesses, the operators. So that bottoms up micro combined with the macro view, you know, I think that's the data points that we're all going to be constantly monitoring on a daily basis to see, are we healing as an economy? But obviously, as we said before, we still have some dark parts of time to get through before we get to the other side.
Rick, any?
Yeah. I think the investment committee has a conference call every morning at 7:30, where we go around to everybody's area and talk about what's new, what's changed. We also have a follow-on meeting at conference call at 10:30, and then one after the market's closed. So we are getting together as a group every day, three times a day, to really stay on top of the information, because as you know, this is a very fluid situation, and so we want to make sure that all of us are staying on our game and looking at what's changed. So I think as Drew mentioned, for me, some of the most important data points is what's happening on a weekly basis with jobless claims. So as I mentioned, tomorrow morning, 5:30 in the morning, we're going to get jobless claims. I expect that to be a very ugly number. It's current, and so we'll watch for that. The other thing is following interest rates, because interest rates are a good leading indicator as to what's going on with the economy. And I mentioned previously spreads, so one of the areas we're looking there and trying to stay on top of with our people are the spreads in the mortgage market for refinances. So both for our clients to refinance, but also households across America to be able to lower their mortgage payment and save cash flow. These spreads have blown out because in the legislation that we talked in the CARES Act, they failed to provide for what we call mortgage servicers. So if a mortgage servicer has a loan and they sold that to State of California's pension plan, and now some person who has now lost their job fails to or asks for a reprieve in their mortgage payment that they can't make it for the next couple months, that mortgage servicer is obligated to still make those payments to the pension plan on time. And so one of them had said that in a three-day period they had 7,000 requests for mortgage payment deferral. Well, that mortgage servicer is going to go bankrupt real quick if Congress doesn't step up. So those are some of the things that we're watching. We call them the spreads in the mortgage market. Are they hitting norms, or do they blow out wide where we're not going to see the lower interest rates benefit the average household? So that will be a sensitive area for us to watch. And then next, the other area is corporate downgrades. How many companies in the S&P 500 are getting downgraded by Moody's and Standard & Poor's? So far, we've had 66 companies in the S&P downgraded. And so watching that, make sure to see if it flattens out, see how bad it gets, and which companies are getting downgraded. So we're going to stay on top of that as well. for our clients. So,
thanks, Rick. And I know you guys are also on conference calls by other firms. I know this morning you were on a call with PEMCO. We're oftentimes on three or four other conference calls, just getting other ideas and information from larger firms to see what they're thinking about. In fact, we just got another invite to a PEMCO call with former Fed Chief Ben Bernanke. That'll be next week. So I think we're getting a lot of good data, both internally and externally, to sort of try to triangulate what the potential outcomes are when this thing turns. Is it, as you said, is it the L-shape, the V-shape, the U-shape? There's a lot of different shapes that people are throwing out in this recovery. We're at the downtrend now, but come the end of second quarter, early third quarter, things should stabilize, and then we'll be able to see just what the trajectory is on the upside. Anything else, Rick, Drew, and Dan?
I'd just like to say thank you for the trust and confidence you have in us, and we will continue to work hard for you. And we're always available, so reach out if you have any questions to your advisor, and John and I are available as well. So
thanks, Rick. So those were some of the questions that we are continually hearing from our clients. We hope this sheds some light on some of the larger trends we are following and gives you some peace of mind related to your investments. We know there's an endless stream of information related to the markets, and we want you to know we are monitoring all of it and making decisions to optimize your investments. These are obviously uncomfortable times, but we encourage you to focus on staying healthy and find enjoyment in the little things. If you have questions to your specific circumstances, please feel free to call or send them to any of us or your wealth advisor. We are always here to help. And again, as Rick said, thank you for taking the time today. We're working very hard on your behalf. And on behalf of Rick, Drew, Dan, and the entire team, I want to thank you. We will continue to communicate with you directly through your wealth advisor and through our thought leadership pieces, which can be found on our website. We should be releasing our first quarter commentary shortly, and stay tuned for another conference call in the next 2 weeks. Thank you, and stay healthy, and I hope you have a great day.
And this concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.